Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is Dukes and Bell, guys. We're at Cobb Galleria. Braves win the day. More about that coming up at 5:20. Stay tuned. Falcon Report's on the way, but we get a chance to visit with the president of our Atlanta Falcons. His name is Rich McKay. He's also head of the competition committee. And, Rich, our first visit of the season. So thanks for giving us some time today. How you doing, my friend?
Gentlemen, I am doing fantastic. We had a win this weekend. We had an Atlanta United win last night, and we had a Brave win today, so it's been a good week.
Sure has, Rich. And as a former general manager, I think you have thought that we're not as bad as the way we looked in Minnesota, and certainly there's some real positives to take from the Eagles game. But what do you think this team's identity is right now?
I think one of the things that, Mike, from being around it as long as you've been around it, is that identity gets developed as the year progresses, right? I mean, the week one football in the NFL is always a little shaky. Obviously, we didn't play our best football, that's for sure, and Minnesota played very well. And then week two, I thought what I liked about our game was how physical we were. We were very physical on defense. We tried to match and exceed their physicality, and it was a really good football game, fun game to watch. But I don't know that our personality and who we are will give you that identity until we played, 4 or 5 weeks in. Now what you're trying to do is get your schemes, get people comfortable, get yourself out of preseason mode into regular season mode, and try to win football games.
Rich, is the pass interference reviews on pass interference going the way you thought they would, or the way the competition committee thought they would?
Can I just thank you guys for waiting for a lot of questions before you got into fast
interference? I asked you an open-ended question about the identity of the team, Rich, and we did throw you a softball first.
I appreciate that, Mike. I really do appreciate that. Thank you for that. Carl, let's remember, kind of the way it works in our league. We've had new rules before, and we've always said, there's a little bit of a breaking in period where you've got to get comfortable with, in most cases, it's how it's going to be officiated on the field and then how it's going to get coached and all that. In this case, it's really going to be what are coaches going to challenge and what is going to be the standard of review. I do think it's off to a pretty good start. I think we, through the preseason, you saw a lot of challenges from coaches, a lot, many more challenges probably than we even anticipated, and I think that's because it was the preseason. I think you've seen that number go down because we clearly don't want too many challenges. And then I think people are starting to get comfortable that what clear and obvious is going to mean is you're going to have to be able to prove it on the tape. It's not just going to be, I think that's pass interference. It's going to have to be very, quote, clear and obvious. So I do think we're getting there. I still think it's a learning process. It's a brand new rule to us. We've never been in the business of being able to put a foul on. In other words, there's a play, it's over, and all of a sudden either there's a challenge or because it's a score or a turnover, there's a review and somebody could put a flag on. That is different, and I think that'll take a period of adjustment for fans and for officials. But I do think it's off to a pretty good start.
It's a Rich McKay, guys, the president of our Atlanta United Falcons. He runs the whole show, but he runs the Falcons, and he's also on the competition committee, as Carl mentioned, so he's always a great source when we have events like this weekend where the refs did have some moments. And, Rich, we do see a lot of turnover. Carl and I mentioned this earlier in the show. Is that also a byproduct of this? You got a lot of younger refs this season?
You do. The one that had the controversial play in Los Angeles is a veteran. He's a veteran ref. That has done it for a long time and done it at the highest level. And, in that case, blew the whistle, in which the league, came out right away and said, clearly should not have blown the whistle. I think since we got replay in, many, many, many years ago, the one thing we've tried to tell our referees and even on-field officials, if they're faced with a call right in front of them, is if you're not certain of what you're seeing, remember that if you let the play continue, we can always correct it with replay. But once you blow the whistle and kill the play, then replay cannot correct it. So in that instance, the play, you know, was not officiated the way it should have been, and the league came out and acknowledged that right away. And I would just tell you, that wasn't because of a new official. You know, Walt Anderson's an excellent referee that's been doing it for a long time. And that one, he just didn't get it right. But I think we do have a number of younger guys that have come in this year. And so far, you know, it's gone pretty well. But again, it's not so easy to come into the NFL and become an NFL referee.
Rich McKay, president of our Atlanta Falcons here on Dukes and Bell. Falcon Report coming up. What did Julio have to say today? Special teams coach Ben Kowicki speaking as well. We'll get to all of that. Rich, what about these in-season trades we're seeing? It seems to me like there's just more. And what do you think the reason is behind that?
Yeah, well, it's not that – the answer is, I think you're right, Carl. If you look at the last 3 years and you say, are there more than there used to be, the answer is yes. It doesn't mean there's a lot of them because it's still hard, as I've talked to you guys before on this little segment, it's still hard to make in-season trades, right? Because, you know, you're trying to tell your locker room, hey, we're competing for championships, we really want to go, and all of a sudden you're trading a player away and asking for a pick next year. So there's a lot of complexity in trying to make that trade and still keep your team moving down the path. But I do see it more than we've seen in the past, and there are teams that are more comfortable with it. Still a small in number. It's hard to do because if you're the acquiring club, you know, you've got to bring that player in. You've got to teach him a new system. You spent all offseason getting your team ready, and all of a sudden you're going to incorporate somebody new. That is not easy in football to do. There are certain positions it's easier than others, but it's not as easy as it might be in other sports.
It is Falcons president Rich McKay with us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Rich, I know you can't talk about specific players and teams, but we've seen guys, you know, go into the fourth year or the fifth year and not happy and sitting out. Owners don't want to draft players to see the talent not on the field. Do you think in the next CBA we might actually see shorter-term contracts?
Yeah, so I don't think you'll see the collective bargaining agreement won't be the driver of that, Mike. It won't be a collective bargaining agreement that limits, you know, contract to X years or Y years. It will be more driven, if that happens the way you describe it, it'll be driven by players and teams as they begin to negotiate over what's the amount of guarantee and therefore what's the amount of years. That could be a discussion. I think if you look at our last collective bargaining agreement back in 2011, one thing we did is we greatly increased the amount of fines for holdouts. And the thing that happened as a result of that is you saw holdouts go way down. First of all, we solved the rookie situation and saw what was, for those of us that used to follow football, you know, in 2007, we used to have, you know, a massive amount of rookie holdouts. We don't have any anymore because that system's kind of been fixed. We also got rid of veteran holdouts. All of a sudden, they've come back, right? They've come back because the money's gotten much bigger. Those fine amounts aren't as relevant anymore. And I do think that as we begin to look at the next CBA, there will be discussions about holdouts because nobody really likes them. You know, there's certainly the fans don't like them, teams don't like them, and I don't even think the players like them. So if there's a way to deal with deadlines and move those deadlines up and try to limit holdouts, I think it is something we should try to do.
I mean, just because, I mean, for instance, the rookies. The first round is kind of a crapshoot. It's almost 50-50 on who's going to pan out. But you have a lot of guys going into that fourth or fifth year that have outperformed their contracts. So I thought, would they ever look at the NBA where now guys are doing much, I know rookie deals aside, but maybe doing like a third year with a fourth-year option? Is that something the players are going to want?
I don't know if you're speaking on the union's behalf, but I would say no. I think that the one thing about it is that, you know, as a league, we make a big, big investment in young players, and they develop over different periods of time. You're describing, you know, there are people that just greatly exceed. There are. That number is not tremendously high, right? And so I think the system right now has served the players very well from the standpoint of allocation of dollars towards rookies versus veterans. And really it's become that league where we've said, listen, when you've earned it, you're going to get paid. And that, so the system has worked pretty well. It does not mean, though, to your point, Mike, that there aren't exceptions. There are. You've seen a couple of them this year.
Right. Rich McKay joining us here on Dukes and Bell. A couple more things with Rich, guys, as we broadcast live from Cobb Galleria inside of Murph's. The way the league and owners view fantasy football has changed over the last few years, obviously embracing it more, but also the gambling aspect. What do you think those views are, and were you a big part in helping change those views?
Yeah, so I think that let's just talk fantasy before we get into the idea of, you know, the FanDuels of the world and that. I think fantasy football, when I first remember the league and the discussions of the league, there was a lot of feeling within that, you know, the owner's room of, hey, you know, there may be a way to monetize this, and this could really be good for us financially. I think what I like about the league is we quickly, and it's been a good long, probably 8 years ago, kind of pivoted away from that and said, you know what, just really, let's not view this as a revenue opportunity. Let's view this as an engagement opportunity. Here's an opportunity for us to engage with younger fans, different demographics that can play fantasy football, stay connected to the NFL, want to watch all the players, all the teams, you know, whether it's through their red zone or wherever it may be. And it's become a real engagement tool for us, for fans, not, you know, beyond just our stadiums and the people watching on TV. It's just created a really cool engagement tool. Then you comes the idea of the FanDuels and those fantasy leagues in which there's wagering. I think the league has, we've always kind of kept our hands off of that. But you've seen with, right, you know, with the Supreme Court ruling, all of a sudden you've seen the legalization of it, and you have seen a definite change in sports wagering beyond just fantasy, sports wagering itself and the legality of it in many states. I think, again, it's a good opportunity potentially for fan engagement, and one that you can, again, grow the sport and grow sports. So we'll see. But I think fantasy football itself for us as a league has been a great way to get new fans and to grow our fan base.
All right, Rich, before we cut you loose, man, when are you going to take the job and save USC, man, be the AD? What?
Now, what are you talking about? Are you hey, you have lost your mind. Now, go back and ask a replay question.
Hey, Rich, we appreciate you, as always.
Thanks, as always,
Let's
Rich.
Go get a win, right, man, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
All right.
That's our man,
guys,
Rich McKay.
See you guys in Indy. See ya.
No doubt.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.